Welcome back to the South Harbor Church Podcast. South Harbor is a part of the Harbor Churches, which exist to help people find their way back to God. This week, Pastor Chris wraps up our study of the book of Mark as we consider how Mark's gospel came to be. As always, for more information about how you can be a part of the South Harbor Church community, stick around after the message. And now, let's head over to Pastor Chris.
If we have not met yet, my name is Chris. I am the students pastor here at South Harbor. It's been an honor and privilege to do that. If this is your first time here, really glad that you are with us. You are the ones that are not still traveling back from spring break. So that means either you needed a buffer day from vacation because you had kids on vacation with you, or you didn't go anywhere. And we're glad to have you either way. And I recognize that as you walk into these spaces, you carry a bunch of different things. For some of you, this has been a really great season of life. You are like on top of cloud nine. Life is good. You've had everything going really well for you. I also recognize on the opposite side of that, for some of us, this has been a really hard season and complicated and difficult and messy for any number of reasons. And I think the beautiful part about coming to a space like this is wherever we find ourselves, coming back from spring break or staying home or having really good things or really hard things, is we all get to do the same thing in this moment. We believe in a God who is in control of everything, that we come to learn from the scriptures and sing praise and worship to him, because we believe that he does good things in the midst of it. And we just take a moment to stop and be together, to breathe together and do that all together. And it's a really beautiful space. And so today, I want to spend one more day in the book of Mark, sort of. It's kind of talking about the book of Mark and some of the characters and people that were integral into it, the formation of the book of Mark, because it's one thing that we haven't really talked about in this entire thing is the fact that along the way, we almost, even though Mark was often seen as the first book of the Gospels written, we almost didn't get the book of Mark at all. And I want to show you that this morning and show you the really important spaces that all three of these kind of main characters that we'll talk about in the story played in order for this to happen. Because I think these three people play, we can look at our own lives and see maybe how we've been some of these people, how we need to be some of these people, or how life in the future may help us be some of these three people along the way. And so we're going to spend a little bit more time in the book of Mark. If you are new with us, you maybe have heard this before, but the book of Mark is, out of the four Gospels, it is really the one that wastes very little time. Mark, from the get-go, is like a guy or girl, wakes up in the morning, drinks way too much coffee on an empty stomach. Like, have you ever had those jitters before from like having way too much coffee, right? Like, you just feel like you want to move a million miles an hour, right? Or I had a friend of mine who said when we were in seminary, the book of Mark is kind of like a dog at 2 a.m. when they wake up with the zoomies. Like, it just, it wants to move. It wants to go. It wants to pull you into the future as fast as it can go, because Mark has something he wants to show us. Throughout the entire book, Mark wanted to show us the entire time. He didn't waste any time really on the early stages of Jesus' life. He got right into the ministry, right into the miracles, because he wanted the readers to see that Jesus was here, that he was God on earth, that he was all-powerful and all-knowing. He was doing miracles. He was raising people from the dead. He was changing water into wine. He was casting out demons. He was doing all of these things, and Mark didn't want to waste time. He wanted the readers to get into the nitty-gritty of it, and that was one of the points that he wanted to prove. The other thing that Mark wants to show us along the way, and I think it's on purpose, and we'll see why in a little bit, but Mark also wanted to show us that the disciples were less than perfect. From the very beginning, Mark paints the disciples as, yes, people who love Jesus and want to chase after him, but he shows these individuals in a light where sometimes they're a little bit slow. Sometimes they don't fully understand what Jesus is saying, and they have to ask him questions like multiple times. Sometimes they screw up in royal ways that like we would all look at if we didn't know how the story ended up and be like, why did Jesus care about these guys so much? They royally screw up all the time. And Mark, while wanting to prove and show who Jesus is really quickly, also wants to show us how incredibly flawed the disciples are. And that is on purpose, right? He didn't want to Photoshop them in any way, shape, or form. And I know Photoshop wasn't a thing. If you're not familiar with that, students, if you don't know what that means, there's this thing now called looks maxing that's kind of like what Photoshopping has taken over from, right? Photoshopping was this thing that we all talked about in like the 90s and 2000s where you'd take an image of somebody and it would look way better than what it was, right? And so I had a little bit of fun this morning and I took a picture of myself. That was me at like 6:30 in the morning. And then I asked AI to Photoshop me a little bit. It made my head tiny. It's like, what happened there? And it fixed, Jared, I think he's back in the office right now, but he pointed out it fixed my teeth too. It knew when I was in third grade, I got my teeth knocked out with a hockey stick and it fixed them to make them perfect again. It's wild, right? But Mark wanted us to kind of not worry about the Photoshop aspect. He didn't want the disciples to be painted as perfect. He wanted more of the picture like on the left, right? Like 6:30 a.m., Chris, who's just had a bunch of coffee. You can see his beard is not fully taken care of. He's got crooked hockey teeth, like all of that sort of stuff. He wanted us to see that the disciples were not perfect. They weren't Photoshopped. They weren't all put together. And that was on purpose, because Mark has something even bigger that he is trying to show us. He wants to show us that Jesus is all powerful and that Jesus is ultimately headed to the cross to care for those individuals who are not all put together, who don't have everything right going on. And along the way, he's asking the questions of these disciples who are getting it wrong. He asks this big question of what does it actually mean to follow Jesus? Because in this gospel, discipleship is not the shiny and easy thing that we all think that sometimes it should be. He wants us to see that it's hard, that there are moments where we will screw up, and that there is a God who is bigger and better than all of our royal mess ups along the way and still loves us despite it. And Mark is one of those individuals. And I want to show you that this morning, because when we look at John, we have a picture of him that you can kind of get an example of what he looks like. But when we think about John, we get to see really early on in the book of Acts who John is. John shows up very early in the book of Acts, and he starts to travel around with a name that you may know, Paul, and also with somebody named Barnabas. Both of these two people will also play a big part in our story. But along the way, John Mark screws up in some way, shape, or form. We don't exactly know what it was or how it was, but it's to the point where had a couple of other things not happened, we may not have the book of Mark in the way that we know it. And so because of Mark's royal screw-ups, I think he's trying to show the point that Jesus is stronger and bigger than all of our royal screw-ups. He shows the disciples in that way because it is his life experience. I want to show you that this morning. And so I have a timeline that we're going to create, right? So sometimes I've been doing this in student ministries for this year with middle schoolers. I got this question multiple times of like, I don't understand how the scriptures all fit together. And so in our middle school youth group, we've been walking from the beginning of the scriptures, and we're going to get close to getting all the way through it at the end in 1 year to say like, hey, there are some things along the way that like, if we just read them book for book, we might not understand, like, for example, that Ezra and Nehemiah take place around the same time as like Babylon and Daniel. Like, if we just see these books as all these separate things, we don't get the bigger picture of how it all worked out. We don't get the story in its full entirety. And so this morning, I want to create a timeline because the same sort of thing happens in the New Testament where we get a bunch of different stories about what happens. But sometimes because there's letters in there and there's the story of Acts, we don't always know how it fits together. And so I want to create a timeline along the way so we can kind of piece that together. And at the end, I want to show you why that's important and how this can be impactful for our lives to understand this and to see John Mark's story and Barnabas's story and Saul's story, who becomes Paul along the way. So we're going to start with Saul, okay? So Saul first shows up for us in Acts chapter 8. So if you have a Bible, you can turn there with me. Acts chapter 8, starting in verse 1. We'll read verse 1 through 3. This is what it says. as Saul, or and Saul, approved of his execution. The chapter before, Saul is at this execution of an early church father named Stephen, who was kind of known as like the first martyr for the Christian faith. He was stoned to death by the religious leaders, and Saul was there approving of his execution. And there arose on that day a great persecution against the church in Jerusalem. They were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria, except for the apostles. Devout men buried Stephen and made great lamentation over him. But Saul was ravaging the church, and he entered house after house, and he dragged off men and women and committed them to prison. This opening scene of Saul reminds me of like when you go and you watch a movie and like the first thing they do in the movie is they want to set you up to know like who the bad guy is in the story. And it's like right away, they want you to know that you're supposed to be scared and terrified of this person. And this is exactly what John Mark is doing with Saul as he shows up. It reminds me of like the movie, The Dark Knight, right? Have you ever seen this movie before with the Joker? I wouldn't be a good youth pastor preaching on Sunday without some sort of superhero reference, I was told. In the beginning of The Dark Knight, you see the Joker shows up right away, and they want you to know that this guy is incredibly chaotic, is incredibly evil, is incredibly mean. They want you to be terrified of what the Joker, anytime the Joker comes on the screen, they want you to know that he means business and he is terrifying. Like, you don't know what's going to happen every single time he comes on the screen. This is exactly what John Mark is doing with Saul. He wants you to know that every time you see him, like, he is the big bad guy in the early church's story, because he is not a follower of Jesus. He is the exact opposite of what a follower of Jesus would be. He is entering homes. He is ravaging the church. He is ripping families apart. He is dragging people off to prison, and even sometimes attending to their deaths like Stephen. And so Saul is introduced like the threat that no one wants near the people of God. But almost immediately, in the very next chapter, there's this kind of conversion moment where Saul is going on his way to do probably even worse things than he had done before. He's on his way to Damascus. He has these letters of approval for being in synagogues and kind of doing what he's done before to early church fathers, doing it there as well. And in Acts chapter 9, verses 1 through 9, it says, "But Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues at Damascus, so that if he found any belonging to the way, men or women, he might bring them bound back to Jerusalem. Now, as he went on his way, he approached Damascus, and suddenly a light in the heaven shone around him. And falling to the ground, he heard a voice saying to him, 'Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?' And he said, 'Who are you, Lord?' He said, 'I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. But rise and enter the city, and you will be told what you are to do.' The men who were traveling with him stood speechless, hearing the voice, but seeing no one. So Saul rose from the ground, and although his eyes were opened, he saw nothing. And so they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus. And for 3 days he was without sight and neither ate nor drank." So in this moment, we have the opening scene of Saul being painted as this bad guy. The very next thing that we get is now Saul has had this moment of conversion, right? Where everything is starting to shift for him, where his heart is getting back right again, where he is gonna start wanting to do more and more of these really good works and bringing along people along the way, and he wants to spread the word of God as much as he can. But he has a problem, because his narrative has already been written that he is the bad guy. Every time he comes into a city, people run away from Saul, right? Because they've heard the legend of who Saul is, right? But Saul, at the same time, has had this change of heart, and he really wants to get back in the good graces of the disciples. And so he tries to go back to Jerusalem again and just kind of like shows up, right? Which is kind of like if you've ever had somebody like send you a message out of the blue with like a business opportunity. It's kind of like what this is, right? You're like, okay, what's the ulterior motive behind you? Like, do you just want my money? Like, what is going on here, right? Like, everybody would have been looking at Saul coming in and being like, well, hold on a second. Didn't you just go to Damascus to like kill all of these? Like, weren't you the same guy that took like my grandfather away from our family like 2 years ago and we haven't seen him? Like, aren't you that guy? And now you're coming here and you want to be with us and worship Jesus? Right? Like, they were all incredibly skeptical of Saul just showing up. They say in Acts chapter 9, verses 26 through 28, it says, when he came to Jerusalem, he attempted to join the disciples. And they were afraid of him, for they did not believe that he was a disciple, right? Now imagine, go back to the Joker from The Dark Knight, right? Opening scene, pure chaos, like anarchy, like setting him up as the big bad guy. Now imagine if the very next scene is the Joker having some sort of encounter and his life is radically changed, and now he like wants to hang out with people regularly and he's got a smile on his face, right? And I don't know about you, but I'm still not trusting that guy if he's walking up to my house, right? Like if I was one of those bank tellers that survived and I saw him walk up to my house and he's like, hey, sorry about that. Like, can I have dinner with you? Like, I'd be like, no way, man, get out of here. Like, shut the door. Like, go as far away from me as possible, right? Like, the disciples had every reason to be skeptical of this guy, the same way that, like, everybody in Gotham City would be super skeptical of the Joker. It just makes sense because of past life experiences that they would not want anything to do with him. And into our story comes a guy named Barnabas. Barnabas was an early church father who, he was older than most of the people in the rooms. He had seen a lot of life. He was an early Jesus follower at that day and age. From the very beginning, we get this glimpse that he is incredibly highly respected. He's not just some like average person on the side. Like, he carries a lot of weight in the early church world. In Acts chapter 4, we get this kind of description of him as kind of the first time we see him. It says, thus Joseph, who is also called by the apostles Barnabas, which means son of encouragement, a Levite, a native of Cyprus, sold a field that belonged to him and brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet. Like, he is named in the book of Acts. And when you see a name, you know it carries a lot of weight and a lot of importance and a lot of power. Barnabas is seen as one of like the major players and movers and shakers in the early church. He was an elder there that carried a lot of credibility at this critical moment for Paul. Because while Paul is being rejected by the disciples, Barnabas enters in back in Acts chapter 9 again, right after that last passage. And it says, but Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles and declared to them how on the road he had seen the Lord, who spoke to him, and how at Damascus he had preached boldly in the name of Jesus. And so he went in and out among them at Jerusalem, preaching boldly in the name of the Lord. And so the next thing on our timeline is this, right? We have at the very beginning, Saul was persecuting. Saul is now converted. Enter Barnabas into the story. And Paul starts to do this, or Saul at the time starts to do this incredible work with Barnabas. Along the way, Paul's name changes, and Paul actually, after this passage, disappears for a while, right? Like, he's brought into the good graces of the church, but then he disappears. Scholars will estimate it's like 8 to 10, sometimes up to like 14 years. Like, he's just gone. And although the scriptures, it's like two chapters later, he comes back in again, it's still a really long time, and a lot of stuff happens in between there. And so Barnabas is still doing all of this really good work. Paul has gone home to Tarsus to do whatever it was he was going to do for 8 to 10 years. And we get this story then in Acts chapter 11. The good news of the gospel has been spreading. More and more people are starting to follow Jesus because of the good news that he is to many of them. So much so that it reaches one of the major cultural hubs in that day and age, a city called Antioch. And in Acts chapter 11, we get this. It says, the report of this came to the ears of the church in Jerusalem, and they sent Barnabas, again, this really respected, well-liked elder of the church, to Antioch. And when he came and saw the grace of God, he was glad, and he exhorted them all to remain faithful to the Lord with steadfast purpose, for he was a good man, full of the Holy Spirit and of faith. And a great many people were added to the Lord. And so Barnabas went to Tarsus to look for Saul, and when he had found him, he brought him to Antioch. For a whole year, they met with the church and taught a great many people. And in Antioch, the disciples were first called Christians. So Barnabas remembers Saul. Remembers he's this incredible preacher who had this amazing conversion moment, and then we haven't heard from in about 8 to 10 years. And Barnabas says, again, I want this guy to be a part of the mission. especially here in Antioch. Why is Antioch so important, though? If you look at this image on the screen, you can kind of see Antioch is down kind of at the bottom central part, right by Syria, in kind of southern Turkey there. The Mediterranean Sea is down to the bottom left there. Antioch is kind of like where all of these major roads like intersect there. Trade from the sea is coming in. There's travel routes that go north, south, east, and west from all the... It is probably like the third most major hub in the Roman Empire outside of like Rome and probably Alexandria in that day and age. And so Barnabas, knowing who Saul is, knowing the gifts and skills that he has, says, I want you to be a part of this. And I want to use Antioch as sort of this like launching moment for where the story is going to go from here. But I want to pause for a second there because they actually make their way back down to Jerusalem, which is where John Mark comes into the story as well, because they're going to go back to Antioch again, but this time with John Mark. Now, John Mark is kind of seen as like the young whippersnapper of the group. Like he's younger. The way I've heard John Mark described is he's kind of like the helper or the aide or like the intern along on the trip at the first time where they kind of go out into their missionary journey. And so along the way, they get back into Jerusalem and they end up staying at a woman named Mary's house. And this is what the passage says. When Peter came to himself, Peter had been arrested and imprisoned. He was coming out and kind of being rehabbed into himself. He says, now I am sure that the Lord has sent an angel and rescued me from the hand of Herod and from all of the Jewish people and of all that the Jewish people were expecting. When he realized this, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose other name was Mark, where many were gathered together praying. What we learn later on, and we'll come back to this passage later, which is why Barnabas kind of calls him along, is John Mark is Barnabas's cousin. John Mark, Barnabas sees a bunch of the potential in John Mark in the same way that he did Paul. And along the way in the journey, they want to stop and pick up Mark along the way. And so in Acts chapter 12, it says, but the word of God increased and multiplied, and Barnabas and Saul returned from Jerusalem where they had completed their service, bringing with them John, whose other name was Mark. So they make their way back up to Antioch. And they are going to launch this major expedition that will forever change kind of the face of the modern day world back then. Now, I don't know how many of you watched the Artemis II launch. Did anybody watch that happen or watch the highlights of it? Like, it's kind of cool that we're going back to the moon for the first time, or maybe to the moon for the first time. I don't know. Any conspiracy? No, that's a dangerous question. I won't ask that question. It used to be a fun game that you could play if there was a lull in the conversation of what's your favorite conspiracy theory that you're most likely to believe. That's a very dangerous game to play now. I don't play that one anymore. But like 10 years ago, that was really fun. But this Antioch became kind of like the launching point into the next frontier for the early church. From Antioch, you could get anywhere in the world. And so Barnabas saw the potential in Saul, saw the potential in John Mark, knew the good work that was happening in Antioch and said, let's continue to do this work out in the rest of the world around us. And so they are sent out. In Acts chapter 13, we read, so being sent out by the Holy Spirit, they went to Seleucia, and from there they sailed to Cyprus. Remember, Barnabas is from Cyprus, so that's kind of his hometown area. When they arrived at Salamis, they proclaimed the word of God in the synagogues of the Jews. And they had John to assist them. Little intern John is along the way. Now, you would think that all of the good things that are happening in here would continue to be good things. But this is where the story shifts a little bit, right? Remember, Mark is writing the book of Mark. He wants people to understand the goodness of Jesus and the power that Jesus has, and that he is the Messiah that has come to save the world. He also writes to show the way in which the disciples are not all put together and not always perfect. And I think we're starting to get a picture, starting now, where we're gonna go next, for why Mark potentially shows, or why John Mark shows this in his book. In Acts chapter 13, verse 13, it says, now Paul and his companions set sail from Paphos and came to Perga in Pamphylia, and John left them and returned to Jerusalem. In this moment, that's all that the writer of the book of Acts, Luke, tells us about this moment. There's no explanation. There's no emotional detail. There's no motive. There's just the fact stated. It's like if you've ever opened up your email and you got that like very HR put together like response of like, Phyllis is no longer with our company, right? Like, then you get to work and Phyllis's desk is empty. It's like, oh, she's actually not. Like, we wonder what happens here. We're not given all of the details in the same way that sometimes we don't get all of the details when things like that happen in life. But we know something happened. We know something happened that happened to Mark that made him want to leave. But we don't know if it was because he was overwhelmed. We don't know if it was because it was too much work for him. We don't know if he got threatened, or we don't know what those details are from this very picture. But what we do know is this is the beginning of kind of the end of the story of Paul and Barnabas and Mark. This dynamic trio that has been going place to place and building up these churches and doing all of this incredible work, this is where it starts to fall apart a little bit. And what we see is that John Mark has left, Paul and Barnabas finish their journey, and then they want to go back again and revisit all of the places. And Barnabas has a brilliant idea. Barnabas says, hey, Mark, you remember that guy that was with us? He is in Jerusalem, where we're going. Why don't we stop and pick him up? Because he's got friends along the way. He's got friends in all of these places that we've gone. They would probably be happy to see him as well. Paul doesn't like that idea. Here's what it says in Acts chapter 15. After some days, Paul said to Barnabas, let us return and visit the brothers in every city where we proclaimed the word of the Lord and see how they are. Now, Barnabas wanted to take with them John called Mark, but Paul thought best not to take them, take with them one who had withdrawn from them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. And there arose a sharp disagreement so that they separated from each other. Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed to Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and departed, having been commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the church. So now we're right on our timeline, right? We've gone through, we've said Saul's persecuted, Saul's converted. Enter Barnabas. Barnabas gets Saul from Tarsus. John Mark joins the mission, but then John Mark leaves the mission. We don't exactly know why, but we find out that Barnabas leaves Paul because there's some sort of heated argument about what happened with John. Paul was ready to give up on John. In fact, he did give up on John. He said, I don't want that guy along with me. Whatever he did, and we don't know what that is, whatever he did, it was good enough for the early church father Paul to say, like, I don't want that guy with me. He doesn't belong here with me anymore. And so Barnabas gets into an argument with him and he says, you might be giving me up on Mark, but I won't do that. I'm gonna take Mark and we're gonna go to Cyprus, right? We're gonna go and do the rest of the work together. We don't exactly know the work that they do because the rest of our scriptures follow Paul and Silas's journey. We get all of the letters from Paul and the journeys that he's doing with Silas and the other people. We get all of his pictures of what's happening, but we don't get any images after this moment of what happened with Barnabas and John Mark. We know they went to Cyprus, which was kind of Barnabas's hometown. We don't know exactly what happened there, but something incredible must have happened. Because Barnabas didn't write off John Mark like Paul did, right? It would have been very easy in that moment for John Mark just to be like, all right, fine, I'm done. Like, I'm out. Like, I want nothing to do with this. Like, I was burned by Paul for whatever that reason was, and I just want nothing to do with it anymore. And yet Barnabas doesn't give up on him, so much so that later in the scriptures, we actually see Paul in his later years write good and helpful praises about who John Mark is. Remember, we don't know what happened here. Something happened because Paul, at the end of his life, writes a couple of passages kind of praising and commending Mark. In Colossians chapter 4, verse 10, it says, Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, greets you, and Mark, the cousin of Barnabas, if he comes to you, welcome him, right? Paul is writing to the church of Colossae saying, hey, there may be this young dude who's coming around who you need to welcome him. He's a good guy, right? Years before, Paul wouldn't have said that. Something happened along the way that now Mark is seen as this really good guy again. In Philemon, verse 23 and 24, it says, Epaphras, my fellow prisoner in Christ Jesus, sends greetings to you. And so do Mark, Aristarchus, Damas, and Luke, my fellow workers. Again, something has happened to get Mark back in his good graces. And at the very end, in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 11, we see Paul write, Luke alone is with me, but get Mark and bring him with you, for he is very useful to me for ministry. In Acts chapter 15, Paul does not think it wise to take John Mark with him. He's given up on him and he's written him off. But in 2 Timothy chapter 4, Paul wants Mark brought to him at the end of his life. In Acts chapter 15, Mark is the point of a sharp disagreement, to the point where Paul and Barnabas split. These two powerhouses in the faith separate and go separate ways. By the end of Paul's life, Mark is useful to him in ministry. I think Mark writes the book of Mark for a very specific reason. I think, one, he wants to show the continued grace of God in a person's life, even when they royally screw up in some way, shape, or form, right? Even though we don't know what that is, or when everybody else has given up on them and you feel like you're at your lowest, right? Like, God hasn't given up on him. And he wants to show the messiness of the disciples on purpose. Because at some point in his life, he screwed up. And there was a royal messiness. Somebody like Barnabas, who was following Jesus, stepped into his life and redeemed him. We don't know what happened kind of in these middle years, right? We have no idea what happened there. It's just a big question mark. Like, we have no idea what happened in those spaces. But what we do know is something happened to get Mark back on the journey again. So I have two closing thoughts. The first is this. Some of you may feel a whole lot like Mark right now, in that kind of pivotal moment in the middle. Maybe when you hear Mark's story, something in you connects with that portion of the story. The parts where maybe something did not go the way you hoped it would. Maybe there's a chapter in your life that you wish that you could have gone differently, or maybe it's a season where you are tired or discouraged or overwhelmed or hurt, or you feel like you've lost your footing in some way, shape, or form. Maybe that's where you find yourself. If that's the case, Mark's been there. So much so that he wrote a gospel talking about the messed upness, that's a word, the messed upness of the disciples and the goodness of God in their lives, even when they didn't deserve it, right? The things that have happened in your life may not have been your fault, right? But Jesus shows up in the midst of them to redeem them. In the same way that something happened in the middle there where Jesus entered back into Mark's life, even though he was kind of cast away by Paul, wanted nothing to do with him, he entered in and restored him, so much so that at the end of his life, Paul was calling for him. So maybe you find yourself in that space. I'm really glad that you're here at this church. I know many people have come through these doors in seasons of burnout, right? Whether you're a former ministry leader or somebody who is really invested in a church or have been in seasons where life has kind of like kicked you while you're down a little bit. I know many stories in this church are people that have found their way here during those seasons of life. And I'm really glad that you found your way here because this church has helped people heal. This helped people like Mark with Barnabas, has had people come in and restore people, have brought them back up and have helped them back on their journey and have showed them that God is a good God who loves them even at their lowest moments in life. So hear this. This is a place where you can be honest, where you can be open about the hardships that are going on in life. You can be at your lowest and that is totally okay because we've got you. And we've done that before, and we want to do that with you. And so I'll be here after service. If anybody wants to talk about anything or process stuff, I will be here as somebody who can be there for you as well. My second thought is this. Some of us are in really good seasons of life. Some of us are more like Barnabas in the story, where we have a lot to give, where we have time and we have energy, we have encouragement, we have a heart that is chasing after Jesus in ways that we have never experienced before, and you want to give back a little bit of that energy and that passion to somebody who might need it as well. For some of us, you might be Barnabas in this season, and we're really glad that you are here as well. Because as you look around this room, we don't know everybody's stories, but we know that people are carrying a lot of different things, both good things and hard things. In your workplaces, you know people probably better than you do here, the things that they are carrying in their life. And they may need somebody like a Barnabas to enter into their life and to pick them up, say, hey, despite whatever has happened, whether it's your fault or life's fault or somebody else has done something to, like whatever the situation is, let me be in it with you. Let me be an encouragement to you. Let me help lift you up, help restore you. Let me help put you back on right footing again so that we may walk this journey of faith together. From the very beginning, this entire timeline is painting a picture that Mark wants us to see. Sometimes it's hard to see that when we don't sit down and put it all together, when we just read one story at a time. But what Mark is trying to tell us from the very beginning is that Jesus is a very real and good God. He doesn't want to waste any time to get us to see that point. And also, that life is messy and that things are hard and that sometimes we'll screw up or the world will do us wrong, and that Jesus is always there to walk alongside us and restore us. Sometimes we're Mark, sometimes we're Barnabas. And God calls us into both of those spaces at different times to work incredible works with the people that are around us and to be the church that we're called to be. So would you pray with me? God, we thank you for your words. This wonderful story of John Mark, the writing of the Gospels, the ways in which he doesn't waste any time to tell people who you are because of the experience that he has had in life and the remarkable story that he has because of your goodness in his life and through the goodness of Barnabas. So God, would you continue to lift us up? Would you help us see the people around us who need encouragement? If we are the people that need encouragement in this season, would you help us reach out? Because you're at play in both of those spaces, and we're grateful to you for that forever. So God, we love you, and we'll talk to you soon.
For more information about how you can become a part of the South Harbor Church community, find us on the web at www.southharbor.org. Or find us on Facebook and Instagram at South Harbor Church. And on Sunday mornings, you can find our service streamed live at 8:45 a.m. on Facebook and YouTube. And so from all of us here at South Harbor Church and the Harbor Churches, we want to wish you a blessed week.